Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's July 29th. 66 degrees under mostly cloudy skies here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 70 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch. Back on this hump day, we're going to be looking at a chance of scattered showers and rumbles of thunder as we go throughout today. We'll call it mostly cloudy skies. I think the extra cloud cover and the chances for scattered showers and thunderstorms will help to hold those temperatures down some. So we're only expecting high temperatures to climb into the low to mid 80s for us in Park City. I think only the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley. Again, I think we will see a decent chance of scattered showers and storms returning across the Wasatch Bag as we go into your Wednesday afternoon, especially, but can't rule it out during the morning hours as well. Now, as we get into the rest of the week, that heat dome, that high pressure ridge will build overhead, and that is going to bring us a big change. We're going to really dry things out as we get towards your Thursday, Friday, and right on into the weekend as well. But of course, when you dry things out this time of the year, you compress the air, it heats up quickly. And yes, we're going to be talking about some heat, some big time heat moving our way as we head into the end of the week and especially this weekend. So your high temperatures for your Thursday, I think they climb back closer to 90 degrees for us in the Park City area. We'll see those highs climbing back into the mid 90s in the Heber Valley. By the time we get towards your Friday, lots of sunshine. We're going to be looking at temperatures in the low to mid 90s in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures around 100 degrees in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into the upcoming weekend, this is when we see the core of the heat building in. High temperatures will be in the mid to upper 90s in Park City, and we'll see those high temperatures climbing into the triple digits. We're talking 100 to 105 as we go into your Saturday and Sunday. And again, with high pressure overhead, we're expecting nothing but sunshine as we go through a very hot weekend. We will likely be seeing the excessive heat risk increasing, so don't be surprised to see some heat alerts being issued for the weekend time frame. Otherwise, heading into next week, the heat will back off just a little bit, with highs going from the mid-90s to the low 90s in Park City, highs going from the 100 to 105 range to just around 100 in the Heber Valley. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. In just a few minutes, I'll be introducing you to Dan Warnberg. He's the new interim head of school at Park City Day School. And from Park City Leadership's Alumni Board, I have board members Betsy Wallace and Frank Lynch talking about how to be a member, as well as some details on some upcoming alumni events. And from the Alfing and Ski Museum, Executive Director Annie Balmer in with details about the upcoming Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame celebration and this year's inductees. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life. Today's guests include Lynn Peoples, journalist and authority on circadian rhythms. She talks about the new legislation around daylight savings time and how it might affect all of us in the seasons ahead. Then, as part of the Live Like Sam Resilient Youth Series, Amy Levinston, new executive director of the Egyptian Youth Theater Program, discusses how creative activities such as theater can build community and life skills for young people, as well as revealing their hidden talents. All of that coming up on today's edition of The Mountain Life Heard, of course, every Wednesday from 9 to 10. Taking a look now at some local news, Circles, a program that helps Utahns achieve financial stability, is ending its Heber Valley meetings, that after losing significant funding. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more.
For Utah and Wasatch County residents experiencing poverty, the Circles program helped participants build supportive relationships, learn new skills, and work toward economic stability. But after the loss of a federal grant that provided the majority of its funding, program operators say Circles must end its Wasatch County services. Jessica Miller is the chief impact officer at Community Action Services and Food Bank, the nonprofit that administers the Circles program.
We have needed to cut down our staff from 7 to a 1-person staff.
Circles had previously received $1 million over 3 years through the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families federal grant. It funded almost the entire program, according to Miller. The remaining staff member will continue supporting Utah County families that are enrolled in the program. Miller says no new participants will be accepted until Circles can find additional funding. The organization is asking community members to donate to support the program.
It really is just a transformational program because it helps to inspire people, and to not only just inspire people, but then to teach people It's providing them with the skills that they need to actually make change in their lives so that families can have a different vision for their future.
About 40 Heber Valley families participated in Circles during fiscal year 2026. Community Action Services also operates a food bank at Heber, which is not affected by the loss of funding. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
And Wasatch County's Children's Justice Center will get an upgrade this year. KPCW's Christine Weller has more on the $1.2 million project.
The Wasatch County Children's Justice Center was built in the late 90s and has since outgrown the space. The County Council approved an expansion to the building next to Old Mill Elementary in Heber in early July. For decades, young survivors have found support at the center, and advocates have interviewed children about abuse allegations. Director Kurt Hoffman said the upgrades will improve those efforts.
As you can imagine, they typically don't use their big voice, and they want to talk about those hard things. We want to be able to capture those small voices and not have to have it be repeated. So we're soundproofing and improving our video and audio recording equipment in our interview rooms.
The upgrades also include new ADA-compliant bathrooms and ramps, as well as a new 900-square-foot conference room connecting to the back of the building. Another addition is parking. Hoffman said the lot now has 10 stalls and another 8 will be added.
Our parking lot is incredibly small and not sufficient to fit all the team players. When we have, you know, a family come to the center, yours typically forensic interviewer, the victim advocate, CPS, and law enforcement. So you're talking, you know, 7 to 10 people at a time.
A multidisciplinary team of around 20 people also meets at the center monthly. The county estimates the project will cost up to $1.3 million. A state grant is expected to fund nearly half the total amount. Donation dollars will also support construction costs. Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh said construction will start in the next few weeks. The county aims to finish the project by the end of the year. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, the Park City Day School Board of Directors has appointed Dan Vornberg as the school's new interim director. He joins me now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I guess it's officially head of school. Is that your title?
That's a contemporary title.
Yeah.
So yes.
Well, so congratulations on the appointment. Start by just telling us a little bit about yourself and your background in education.
Originally from Boston, Massachusetts, and sort of college in Chicago, business for a year or two, and then sort of find my way back to New England and graduate school in education, and then started as a third grade teacher at an independent school called Milton Academy, which is on the South Shore of Boston, and that sort of launched my career in education. Went on to run a third, fourth mixed grade, and then become head of a school in Watertown, Massachusetts, and then from there ran schools or senior leadership positions in independent schools in Albany, which is actually somewhat a little reminiscent of this, with sort of smaller school, but Albany, Indianapolis, Columbus, Ohio, most recently Los Angeles for 13 years, and then I had the good fortune to find my way here.
Okay. Well, I don't hear that that Boston accent at all.
Well, my mother was from Ohio, so if I rolled my R's, it got uncomfortable.
Okay. So what kind of attracted you to the interim position here at Park City Day School?
It's probably parallel tracks. The interim itself, I'd sort of had a full career and 11 years at a school in L.A., and thought I wasn't quite done. I was sort of attracted to the idea of helping schools sort of get set or prepare themselves for long-term headships, and Park City Day School really attracted me, both by mission, sort of philosophy. It's sort of its newness in general, 15 years old. That's what I thought I could bring some experience, help work with the board, work with very talented faculty and staff, and really and deepen sort of a sense of what we mean by community and learning community for a year. And really, I think the interim's number one job is to make it the most attractive long-term headship for another candidate. So that's really what I'm up to.
Okay, so you don't really have any interest in a permanent posting, or do you?
Well, I would, given my age, I think if it came with on-site medical care, that would probably be the I really am at sort of the tail end of my career. I think PCDS would really benefit from somebody 7 to 10 years, which is a good tenure in my field. At this point, after 47 years, I think that would put the school in the best possible shape.
Okay, so you've been in Park City all of how long?
A couple weeks.
That's it?
Yeah.
And are you familiar with the area?
I am 2 weeks in, familiar with the area, although I have to say every day I wake up, I'm sort of pinching myself because of its, you know, not only physical beauty, but also sort of the challenges of a city that is sort of has such history, and also such an amalgam of so many people coming from so many places that make up a really sort of intimate community here in Park City.
Yeah, well, you're probably aware of it just because of the research you did to get the interim position, but it started off as the Cardin Christian Academy, a religious school. It then combined with what was known as the Colby School, and kind of, and now it's the day school. I mean, are you aware? I mean, does the school maintain any of its former philosophies?
That's a great question. I think, you know, I understood it to be a sort of a conflation of a sort of Colby School and maybe Park City Academy, mm-hmm. and as they sort of came together, they sort of built a new view that I think became, you know, secular, non-sectarian, wanted to infuse contemporary practices, wanted kids to receive a moderate level of challenge across multiple domains, integrating curriculum where they could, giving kids a solid experience. In three dimensions, hands-on learning, some of the things that we really have learned over the years that really are absolutely causal to learning, and do it, if you will, in one of the largest outdoor classrooms I've ever seen. And so I think you're, in school life, you're a little bit who you are. You have to look a little bit at who you were. I come from parts of the world where schools are 300 years old, right? So, it's still, I think, a great work in progress. But I don't think we're holding on to necessarily deep sort of post holes in either merging school. I think we've really developed our own identity.
Yeah, so at this point, I mean, how long does the interim position last?
Well,
through the school year?
I'm certainly hoping the whole year. But I think what happens, Leslie, in our work is sort of, I help continue to move the school forward. We look at strategic issues that we want to take on. We prepare for the new head of school. Ideally in our work, the new head of school, what might be appointed as early as November, and then they most likely they'll be working at another school, but I can partner with them for the rest of my tenure so that the transition is as comfortable as possible for all constituents.
Okay, and again, I mean, you just 2 weeks on the job, I was going to ask, I mean, what do you think makes Park City Day School unique compared to with maybe some of the other independent schools you've worked for?
Another great question. Our schools, you know, unique things about independent schools is they're independently governed, independently financed, and that sort of defines independent schools in general. And so I would say of the schools in which I've worked, I there's several things I feel PCDS has it going for it. One is its size. It's intimate, a little over 200 students, the fact that every student can be known. Every faculty member can be known, members of the community. I've only been there 2 weeks, but just the feeling people have, even dropping kids off at summer camp, it's sort of one of those things that my office is right by the entrance. And there really is sort of a powerful and I think healthy social dependency on seeing each other, being connected, all of us sort of pulling an oar in the same direction on behalf of children, being a child-centered organization. I think larger schools, and I'm gonna be careful about terminology, but larger and more traditional schools sometimes, I think, don't necessarily fully encapsulate some of the ways community can play out in smaller and powerful learning communities.
All right. So 200 students, and we're talking preschool through eighth grade?
Well, if you want to go all the way down to the nursery, there is a small nursery where faculty members who have very young children instead of sort of daycare options can bring their kids, which is kind of a wild concept. It was the first school I've had that had that, and when they talk about you want to start early, they are not missing a thing. So, from nursery, let's say, all the way through eighth grade, yes.
Yeah, and I guess, again, with your wealth of knowledge from other independent school, are there any other kind of academic initiatives or perhaps programs you think that would fit here at Park City Day School?
That I might bring?
Yeah.
I think in my interim role, I think there are so many fundamentally good things in the school. Its value system, its commitment to outdoor education, its real desire to offer children a moderate level of challenge, its size, which really can, you know, the real test of a school, Leslie, in my mind, is how far any one child travels along that learning continuum. So we had a great lacrosse program at one school. I'm not looking to bring that. I think it's really to deepen, advance, sustain, and celebrate sort of the things the school really does well, maybe jettison some things that have come and gone, and then prepare to really, I would say, renew the school for the next 15 years and see it move forward.
Now, does the day school basically follow Park City School District's calendar?
That's a good question. I think so. This is a two-weeker in there, but a lot of our discussions have to do with our place and our role in the educational landscape of Park City. I know there's a couple Montessori schools. There's obviously the public schools, and sort of we would like to see ourselves as both a partner and connected to the overall learning community here at Park City.
Yeah, so the Sarda school, though, would be in August sometime, is that?
Yeah.
Or do you wait till after Labor Day?
No. Yeah. There was a time where we went to school after Labor Day, but it's when I was in school.
Okay. And then in terms of tuition, it's a private school, so it's in addition to the property taxes you're paying to the state of Utah, which make up about 2/3 of your tax bill,
okay,
you would have to pay even extra, yeah?
Yeah. Independent schools, independently governed, independently financed, really have three tributaries off one river. One is tuition, right, mm-hmm. which is significant and a real statement of investment in one's child, one child's education. The second is sort of fundraising, and that can be sort of fairs and those sorts of things or special gala events. And the third is direct philanthropic support. And, you know, Leslie, it's sort of like taking a little university and dropping it in a dryer. It sort of runs the same thing when you get those brochures from one's college or whatever. It still operates, and tuition only covers a portion of that. And so it does require philanthropic fundraising. On the other side, it also, by raising money and sort of dropping your anchor in a harbor of what you really mean by community, we're looking to 20-25% tuition assistance to make sure that families are supported and that there are issues of access that we can address and that can we really build a sense of community where we all don't look the same, we all don't come from the same background, we don't all live in the same house. There's sort of a real sense of connectivity through that.
Right, so you do have some diversity, you think, within the school walls.
Well, I've been there with a whole school and sort of more than just sort of race and ethnicity. I think every time we can sign up a new faculty or a new family, we add to the diversity. But yes, I think there's a strong commitment to recognizing that, without being too philosophical, if we can't learn together, we're going to have a lot of trouble living together. And I think that's something I certainly believe in. I think the trustees believe in, and I think the school believes in.
Yeah, and I guess, when you think about investment in education, I mean, why would you start so young? I mean, right? I mean, we got to save for college and now masters, right? I mean, it's... Yeah.
That's a great question. And I'm sure as a news person, you're hearing and reading a lot of, is college, what is college? It's up to $80,000 or $90,000 a year. Do we really need it? How's AI changing things? I happen to, there's a term called old school, which I am trying to jettison from my own lexicon. But I will say that I do think you're developing habits, things that mean something early on, those kind of experiences that you really can't duplicate anywhere else. And I think the younger you start thinking about education, thinking about empathy, right? We're not born necessarily empathetic or born bigoted or what. These are lessons we learn over time. And I think if we start early and we really try to do the right thing for students and we do it in a developmental manner, I think we have the best shot at making the high schools incredibly dynamic and celebratory places and really continue to have this thoughtful discussion on what do we really mean by college? What is a learned person? We have a lot of different mechanisms right now to develop knowledge. I'm not sure we're really good at developing wisdom. And I think the best way to do that is come together, three dimensions, sit, work through a problem together, understand perspective. Plenty of things. I have one in my pocket that can find me knowledge. I'm not sure it makes you a wise person, if that makes sense.
You mentioned artificial intelligence. I mean, it's becoming a bigger part of education, as we know. How does the day school, I guess, approach AI in the classroom?
Again, I beg some ignorance just because I haven't seen fully how it plays out, mm-hmm. but certainly the discussions we're having this summer are almost from the moment an Apple IIe showed up in my classroom 45 years ago. What is the role of technology? How can technology augment the very thoughtful things we have learned through the years that are essential to learning, to essential to problem solving, essential to infusing compassion and empathy into our decision making? I think AI can play an active role in that. I'm cautiously paying attention to whether it can play a primary role, but I think those are discussions we're having at PCDS, and I think we're having coast to coast and worldwide.
So it's taken a long time and certainly lots and millions of dollars to bring Park City School District onto kind of a more traditional, you know, with the elementary, middle, and high school. You know, we now have ninth graders back in the high school.
Yeah.
At some point, I believe the day school was considering expanding to, you know, 12th grade. Is that still in the plans, or have you just kind of found your niche there?
I think that I wouldn't want to tip too far to say absolutely. I think there is, if I were to wave a wand and take a look at sort of the market of PCDS, extended market, if you took, you know, a student who's willing to drive 25 miles to PCDS with their family, if you draw a big circle around that as a big tent, right, the people that might take advantage of this, I think I am a believer that K through 12 education plays an active and important role when you can take kids from early childhood right to adolescence. But I think that would be a strategic, not to punt, but that's a great question, and let's bring on the new head to discuss it. So,
okay. You all set? I mean, fully staffed, ready to
yeah,
start the school year?
Fully staffed. As I said, over 200 kids. And I think, you know, pretty full. I think that they're... that should not dissuade anybody from coming to look. If that kind of philosophical perspective and educational system is of interest, we welcome anyone, even my colleagues in education, to just come see or sort of see one laboratory at work here in Pine Brook.
Okay. All right, Dan, anything else you want to tell our listeners?
No, listen, I really appreciate you having me up here. It's a privilege. I'm huge. Thank you for your dedication to NPR. What a wonderful institution unto itself. So
Thanks
for having me.
Well, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Again, Dan Vornberg is the new interim head of school for Park City Day School. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. While some are busy applying for a seat in Leadership Park City's class of 33, those who have graduated from the program can participate in what's known as the Alumni Association. Joining me now in studio with an update on the association and its activities, I have board members Betsy Wallace and Frank Lynch. Betsy, of course, also serving as a member of KPCW's Board of Trustees, and Frank is our Monday night DJ. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah. So, Betsy, I guess for listeners who may not know, what is the Park City, or Leadership Park City Alumni Association?
Alumni Association is really around the after step of completing the class. And it's a wonderful way to continue on with the networking and actually expanding your networking of people that have gone through the class and are still active within the city of Park City. Anything else you want to add to that?
No, I just think it's an evolving organization. It has changed a lot over the, and I think all of these things are going to be evolving. So we're looking at events that we've done in the past. Some have been great, some have been not so great. So we're continuing to do new things, and we're here to talk about that a little bit today.
Okay. So it's really not connected to Leadership Park City other than it's just the graduates of the program?
Yeah, that's right. And that's where when Scott comes in and talks about Leadership Park City, which is a fabulous program, once they go through his program, then they hopefully will sign up to the Alumni Association and continue on with everything that they've learned and people they've met.
Okay, so it is a bit exclusive because you have to have been through one of the classes to be a member of the association.
That is right. That's exactly how it works. But I think a lot of the events that we're going to talk about just in a second really talk about what we offer. And it is a membership organization. You can go on our online and sign up. But why don't we start off with the first one that we have planned?
Before we jump in, I just want to get a little bit more details because I did go online and it's like there is a membership, annual membership fee of $100. It went up.
Yeah, it did go up. What we were finding is that as we were going through the year and looking to, we pay a lot of the costs for the different events, that we were going negative every, throughout the year. So somehow we had to come up with a balance. We look at it every year. So hopefully it'll go back down as we get more participants and we can try to figure out how to make it all balance.
Okay, so that would help if you had more members.
That's right.
It would be lower for everybody.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, Frank, then you take it away in terms of some of the events that people can participate in.
Well, we have a bunch that we've sort of rescheduled this year. We're going to do a quarterly coffee. It's amazing. Allison Williams, who's in the current class and works over at Lucky Ones, reached out the other day and said, hey, can we have it here? So what a great place to start. That's going to be on September the 2nd. And our next one that we just sort of were working out in the other room is behind the scenes at KBCW. Come in, check out how it all works. Everybody listens on air. You and I, Leslie, know how it works really well. Your version's a little different. There's people here. I usually like it when no one's here. But we're, you know, it's a neat thing we've done behind the scenes over at the Egyptian. I think that went really well. And that's what we're trying to do is show other folks in the community how our community works. And people have lots of questions about it. I always think those things are really fascinating.
Yeah, and with KPCW, you know, it's interesting. People get really nervous about coming in and seeing what KPCW, and if they need to speak with you or others, they're very, very nervous. And so what we're trying to do is start to break down those barriers a bit to understand that this is a great public service. That's what KPCW is about and how it works.
Yeah, it only really gets tough if you're dealing with tax dollars, from my perspective, right? Because
true
then,
that.
Then you need to be accountable.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
true
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yep.
And for the most part, we're pretty nice here. I think I saw something about Arts Festival. Are you going to make that event happen?
You know, we were hoping to make the Arts Festival pre-cocktail party work. I don't think it's going to be able to work. We were going to hold it at my house, and we have glass stairs, so I'm very worried that if it rains, it might not be the best thing ever. So one thing that we're thinking about doing is going either to Alpine Distilling or to Old Town Cellars, because you can access it from Sweet Alley, and just meet there, and we'll get that out if we can, in fact, make that work. You know, the other things that are happening is on September 26th, do you want to talk about Brighton Estates?
Yeah, Brighton Estates is an amazing event. It's early on a Saturday afternoon, so about 3 o'clock. And when the leaves are changing, and it is just beautiful. It's up at the Fisher property. It's just an amazing event. I know sometimes it's harder to get to, but it's going to be very family friendly. So we're encouraging anybody who's interested this year to come.
Yeah, and it's a gorgeous location. And we're going to continue with the All-X program that Janet Quilter puts together for us. And hopefully she'll be on in the end of September to talk about the speakers then. And we're arranging for a line dancing at the cabin, which I've never done, and I really would love to try it. So the cabin across the street on Main Street. So we're working towards that and some other events.
Yeah, we have our holiday party in December. That's always really well attended and lots of fun. And then we're actually, one of the things, you know, if I could back up just a little bit, we are constantly trying to evolve our programming. So this year we teamed up with Leadership Henderson and Leadership San Francisco, and we traded city tours. So we went to Henderson with our alumni and their alumni, and then we went to San Francisco, and they all came here. It was an amazing event, but we constantly keep learning. And one of the things we've learned, and this goes to Jana's been amazing, is they do a lot of events that are tacked on other things. So that's the idea of the Kimball Arts Center, trying to do that. We're also going to do an event with the Shaun White event that's happening in January. What we're looking at is other events in the city that we can sort of tack, we can, for lack of a better term, glob onto and put an event before that so we can get better crowds and a better participation.
Yeah. How many members or due-paying members, I guess I should ask, do you have?
Well, as of last year when this, before the class we have that's coming off, there were around 900 people that have gone to the program, and we have just over 350 people in the class or in the Alumni Association, which is 30%, and that's remarkable if you really think about it. Now, some don't participate all the time, and so that's what we're trying to get the events really at a caliber that people will say, hey, I really want to go and have fun and really reconnect with folks. And that's our goal for this year, is really try to do that. And we ask that alumni associations or people, alumni members or people that have been in classes, if there's anything they want us to try, just let us know, because we would really love to see what really is the magic balance with all this. And we know it's going to be changing all the time, but we're just trying.
All right. And you both are volunteers on the board. I mean, it's, right? It's
yeah, for not, sure. It's a volunteer board.
She loves to say that. Are there boards that are not volunteer? Because I want to be on some paid boards.
Okay. Let's see. I mean, and I guess of those people that do show up, I mean, are they just people looking for fun? I mean, are they the government representatives? Are they the nonprofit representatives? Or do we just have kind of a mix of everybody?
Yeah, I think it's a total mix of it. You know, one of the things, it's totally a mix of everything. One of the things I think we've learned, These city tours, and that, you know, Scott Van Hartsfeld started the idea of it, and we're going to do it again. We're going to do it with new cities, but it is people who are looking to, you know, just learn, like learn new things. And I think that's the biggest thing. Like when we went to Henderson, you know, we did a tour of the Hoover Dam. We did a backstage tour of the Bellagio and the fountains, which was incredibly cool. And we want to do a lot of, even when we were here, we did the Center of Excellence, which I'd never been to before, which is an incredibly cool place. And so I think the goal for our organization, again, is we are going to constantly evolve. I think we view with the Olympics coming up, we'd like to be an important part of the Olympics experience. You know, I had lunch with Miles Redmond on Monday, and we talked a lot about, you know, how that all started and the things that they did. We really want to fill that gap to be a support organization here in Park City for things that are going on now that will also be going on coming up.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to be able to do that. You know, when we talk about the city tour with Henderson in San Francisco, that is separate than the Park City Leadership Program tours. Just want to be really clear about that. But both are very invaluable. One, the one that's attached to Scott, they take a lot of people and they can, you know, have a great time and learn how different communities work. Ours is a little bit more pared down because you're flying here and there, and it's just can be overwhelming. But once you get everybody inside, it's been a blast.
So those that do pay the annual dues are allowed to come into the events for free?
Correct.
And can bring a plus one for a charge? Is that how it works?
So most of them are going to be for free. We're going to reevaluate that all through the year. You know, for $100, we're hoping we're covering a lot of the costs. That's true. If it's a plus one, then that's different because we're covering their costs of food or beverages or whatever may be needed. So thanks for asking that question. That's exactly how we're planning this year.
Okay. And I guess as you guys meet as a board, do you have any goals for the coming year?
Yeah, I think the goals are really trying to make sure that the process of becoming alumni and moving forward within the community allows you to really develop those contacts. So if you decide to run for city council, if you decide to run for any government positions here, or you want to get involved with the board, you know more people to maybe make that happen. And I think that's what's really important. It takes all of us to make this community just the fabulous community it is, and trying to make sure that we keep people engaged throughout the process.
And I would say you said something earlier, Leslie, about being exclusive. I would say our biggest goal is to not be exclusive. We want more people involved. We want more people to sign up who haven't applied for the class. We want to shape Park City as far as the next leadership organization goes, but we want to be very inclusive as opposed to exclusive. So that's the goal if we really have one.
Yeah, and so when you come through your class, the class that's just coming off 32 will have a free membership for 1 year into the Alumni Association, and that's really to help solidify, is this what you want to do? Help us, you know, form what we're doing, and hopefully then they continue on with the Alumni Association. We have a great group of people just around town making Park City even a better place.
Yeah. Are you eligible for any kind of tax grant funding?
Well,
or?
Yeah, that's something we are working on. We're a 501c4, which is not a nonprofit 501c3. The c3s are the ones that you can take a deduction for. C4s are under the context of being a alumni association of some sort, but it does not allow that fee to be a deduction on your tax return. So we're trying to figure out how we can move into a c3 to make it even stronger that people want to participate, and we can ask for sponsorships and hopefully then help us bring that value, that dollar value up, and people get a tax deduction for it. So we are working on that.
Okay, guys, anything else you want to mention?
No, I think this has been great. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.
Okay, Betsy Wallace, Frank Lynch, thanks. So thanks for your time and your volunteerism. Appreciate it. This year's Will and Jean Pickett Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame induction dinner will be held next month, and in the studio with details about who will be inducted and how the public can attend, I have the executive director of the Alfangen Ski Museum, Annie Bonner. Good morning, Annie.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being here. Well, so for people who may not be familiar with it, what is the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame and why was it created?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Intermountain Ski Hall of Fame is housed at the Alfangen Ski Museum. It was started in in 2002 to honor ski pioneers, ski innovators, ski competitors, and inspirational skiers. And we have all of their plaques and information housed in our museum. Every year, we induct a handful of new people into the Hall of Fame that come from either Idaho, Wyoming, or Utah. And we are just approaching our time to induct our class of 2026.
Okay, why those three states?
It is part of the Intermountain region that goes along with ski racing.
Okay. All right. Well, tell us about this year's inductees.
Yeah. So this year is actually a really fun year for us because it is the first year in our history that all three of our inductees are from Idaho. We've been very Utah-centric, you know, being here in Utah, that most of our inductees, we usually have one or two from Utah or all three from Utah. But this year, all three are from Idaho and specifically Sun Valley. So this year we are inducting Muffy Davis, who, you know, she's just the epitome of the story of resilience. She's an amazing ski racer, and just her pivot from regular ski racing to Paralympic racing, and then her work later on, you know, she even went into hand cycling. She's very athletic, very accomplished. She also trained at the NAC, so there's our local tie right there. We're also inducting Rick Capella, who he is the director of sport development for the Sun Valley Ski Education Foundation. And he turned Sun Valley into just the absolute cross-country skiing mecca. He is heralded as being one of the best cross-country coaches of his time, and he's been there since the 80s, so he's had a really big tenure. And then our final inductee is Graham Anderson, who was very instrumental in shaping the way that ski racing is done today. He helped with the breakaway gates. He also created some of the rules for the fist skiing, so he's been huge in the world of ski racing. So all three amazing honorees, and we're really excited to join them to the class.
Yeah, and how is it decided that these are the inductees? Are they nominated?
Yeah, so we get nominations from people, you know, all over. And currently our pool sits at about 39, so we're doing really great. We have a selection committee that reads through these bios and really helps narrow that down into a pool that then goes out for vote to our panel of about 100.
All right, so anyone can submit a nomination?
Yes, anyone can submit a nomination, and forms are available on our website, and we would love to see more nominations flow in.
All right, and when does that happen? Any time of the year?
Yeah, any time of the year. We do need them, if you want them to be in the next voting year, by the end of February.
All right. And I guess what kind of accomplishments or contributions is the selection committee looking for?
They're looking for people that really made an impact on both the sport and then in their communities afterwards. So, you know, there are those that have really accomplished great things in competitive skiing and gone on to win a lot of medals, such as Ted Ligety or Muffy Davis. There are those that have really trudged forward in the world of ski journalism and done big things, like Mike Korologos, who worked for the Salt Lake Trib. There are people that were ski pioneers that started off at these sports, you know, Bob Theobald in freestyle skiing, or the Engen brothers that really helped pioneer the powder skiing techniques.
Okay, so this year's induction dinner, I think coming up August
20th, yeah, from 6 to 10 o'clock. It will be held at the Chateau Deer Valley this year. Beautiful location, and we really appreciate all that they do for us to be able to hold it there. And tickets are $165. They are currently available on our website, which is enginmuseum.org. And we also have table sponsorships available, but you do need to purchase those by August 7th.
Okay, and that's usually what fills the room, or just kind of friends and acquaintances of the inductees.
Exactly, yeah. We get a pretty good crowd supporting our inductees, or those that are really closely tied to the ski life and all of everything skiing. But if you have an interest in skiing, it's a really great event, and we have some great names out there that you can come and meet.
Yeah, roughly how many people have been inducted since it started?
97.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, we're getting up there.
Yeah, and how competitive is the process?
It's pretty competitive. You know, like I mentioned, we have 39 in our pool right now, and we induct about three a year. So, you know, that cuts it down quite a bit. But we get some really great nominations, and it's really hard sometimes to choose.
Yeah, so do the nominations then carry over from year to year if somebody isn't chosen?
Yep, we hold them in our pool and they keep getting out there, and hopefully one day, you know, they'll be voted in. The hard thing is, you know, we have so many great nominees that it's hard to celebrate all of them. So we're currently working on a back-end exhibit at our museum that will celebrate these people that have not quite been nominated. So their information will still be available and you can see their pictures and things like that.
All right. And then once someone is inducted, I know you have you're just a small blurb and a kind of an engraved photo up at the museum itself. And you did a lot of renovation so that you could add more. So how many can you hold?
We have enough to expand for the next 8 years. So there's room. Oh, the math in my head. There's quite a bit of room, but we probably will be expanding about the time of the next Olympics as well to keep adding more.
Okay. And I guess, does the museum continue to add to an inductee story as the materials become available, or is it, it's just once it's there, it's there?
Yes, absolutely. So we also have a touch screen that goes along with our permanent plaques. So while those really don't change unless something big comes out or the inductee wants to change their picture, which we've done a couple of times, we do have a touch screen. So every time that we come across new photos or new videos or they do something else, we're able to add that into the exhibit as well.
Okay. Now, is the induction dinner, is it basically just paying its own costs, or is it a fundraiser of some sort?
It pretty much just pays its own costs and we break even. So it's more of just a way to celebrate these inductees than for us to gain a profit from it.
Okay. Tickets are still available.
Yes, tickets are still available. They're going quick though. So if you want some, please reach out or go to our website.
Okay. Tell me how things are going on at the museum.
They're going great. We've had lots of great traffic this summer, people coming in. We have some new exhibits that we're working on that are coming down the pipeline that I can't quite talk about yet, but just look forward to those. You know, we're building up to the Olympics still. It seems far away, but actually it's pretty close in the grand scheme of things. So coming up with different plans of how to celebrate that. We've just got a lot of really fun things going on.
Yeah, the museum's free, right? I mean, so anybody can just walk in and look around. There are some paid fun things to do.
Yeah, it's free to just come and check out our exhibits. We're open 7 days a week, so, you know, just stop in anytime, 9 to 6. There are a couple paid experiences. We have our mountain sports simulator where you can come and ride a chairlift and try out a whole bunch of different sports, and any money we earn from that is a donation straight to the museum, so it really helps us out. But other than that, you know, come bring your family up. It's great for kids. We have lots of interactives, and, you know, it's a beautiful location.
Okay, and construction's going to get underway here at some point. How is that going to impact you?
Yeah, so we are staying open all through construction. You know, the park is going to be open here, open there. They're closing some things down, but we are staying open the entire time. So please come and support us and check us out. We're there for the community.
Okay, and the Day Lodge across the way from the museum is getting torn down. Will that allow you to expand at some point, do you think?
Not really. We think there might be some room for exhibits in some of the new buildings. We haven't quite figured out details on that yet, but we are looking forward to getting a whole new campus up there. It's going to be really fun. It's great to be in the middle of things.
Okay. And anything else you want people to know?
Nothing else, really. Just make sure that you come and swing by the museum. We'd love to see you all.
Yeah, the numbers are astronomical in terms of how many visits. I think it's like the largest attraction besides maybe the ski resorts.
Yeah. We get just under 500,000 guests a year. So it's a great place for people to come. And I mean, being free always really helps. And we love to remain accessible for everyone. So please come and swing by.
Okay. Annie Baumer, again, is the executive director of the Alfingen Ski Museum. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Summit County property owners are receiving their 2026 tax notices in the mail, and they look a bit different. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that the bonds are now listed separately.
There are about four dozen different governmental entities in Summit County that can levy taxes. So the tax notices that property owners receive each summer look more like an itemized receipt than one single charge. Residents may notice additional items listed when they open the notice this year, but they aren't new charges. Utah law now requires bonds to be listed separately. Summit County spokesperson Bridget Noble says state lawmakers made the change last year. Previously, she says, a government's bonds were lumped in with its tax rate. Park City Municipal, the Park City School District, Basin Recreation, and Summit County are all still paying off voter-approved bonds. This November, Basin Rec plans to ask voters to take on additional debt to build the facilities it says is needed to keep pace with Western Summit County's growth. Recreation officials may refinance that debt rather than simply adding to it, says District Director Robert Parrish. The idea is to avoid sticker shock.
Whether or not we wrap our current bond around our old bonds or if we just do a level debt on just a new bond is a difference of about $50 a year. So we're looking at creating savings by working with Zions to wrap our current debt and potentially refinance our existing bond debt as well.
There's more information about the field houses Basin Rec is designing in Jeremy Ranch and Silver Creek at kpcw.org. July tax notices are not bills. Residents will receive those later this year. The deadline for landowners to appeal their property value and reduce their property tax bill is September 15th. Locals can check their notices to see if they're listed as primary residents, not second homeowners. There's a 45% discount on property taxes for full-time residents, but they must apply to confirm their eligibility with the Summit County Assessor's Office. The application is available online. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And a Park City nonprofit is increasing access to sports for underserved youth across Summit County. KPCW's Zula Britt Lieber reports on the group's rapid growth to help the community.
The cost of skiing, mountain biking, and other youth sports can put them out of reach for some Summit County families. Park City Community Foundation Executive Director Joel Zarrow says its Youth United program is expanding sports options and financial assistance to help more children participate.
Our main focus is to address the critical challenges facing our community. And one of them is it's an expensive place to live. Mountain biking, skiing, all the sports and activities cost a lot of money. And we want to make sure that everybody has access to it.
He says the nonprofit youth program has raised $2 million and registered 11,000 children since its inception 10 years ago. The program relies on community donations and its endowment fund to reduce financial barriers. Youth Access Manager Junior Vieira says the nonprofit pairs kids with sports organizations rather than sponsoring families.
We don't directly fund families. We grant out to the organizations, and each organization has their own scholarship process, and families are encouraged to apply within the organization's scholarship process.
Vieira says Youth United helps families with registration and provides any equipment a child might need, from helmets to skis to lacrosse balls. This year, Vieira says the program granted $350,000 to more than 29 partners. The sports include mountain biking, basketball, soccer, and alpine and cross-country skiing.
We work with almost every sport, and if there's a sport that a family wants to do that we don't currently work with, we make that connection with the organization, and we connect the families with the organization.
Zarrow says the group hopes to raise another $350,000 for next year.
There's still a need. I think a lot of community members still don't know about the program. I don't think we've hit the limit yet.
Applications for the next grants open in early 2027. For more information, visit kpcw.org. Ula Britt Libre, KPCW News.
And for one weekend only, to Monongah Valley Theater, presenting four performances of Newsies Junior. It's a 60-minute youth musical adaptation of the 2012 Broadway musical and the 1992 Disney film. It's set in 1899 and based on true events. The story follows charismatic newsboy Jack Kelly as he rallies fellow Newsies to strike after newspaper publishers raise prices at the workers' expense. Timpanogos Valley Theater marketing manager Bettina Geis says 65 local young performers make up the cast, led by director Roy Buttermore, who is a college student.
The story's the same. It's slightly shorter, so like some of the songs will be shorter. Some of the things might be taken out just a touch. This one, the story is all there that you need to know. The great dance scenes with cartwheels and backflips and all that is there.
She says the show's message remains as relevant today as it was more than a century ago.
People working together can make a change. Kids in particular, this story, I'm a school teacher, so we talk about that a lot. Kids can still go to their town boards and either get a park designed or get a skateboard park put in or kids can still make a difference. Groups of people can still make a difference.
Newsies Junior will be performed at the Timpanogos Valley Theater in Heber City this Friday at 4 and 7 p.m. and then again Saturday at 2 and 7 p.m. For tickets and more information, you can go online to kpcw.org. And a reminder that all of the Wasatch Back is under Stage 2 fire restrictions. Wasatch County elevated restrictions Tuesday as fire danger increases with the warm, dry weather expected here the rest of the week. Open fires of any kind are banned in all unincorporated areas of Summit and Wasatch counties. That includes charcoal grills, barbecues, and coal and wood-burning stoves in developed camping and picnic grounds. Both Wasatch Back counties enacted Stage 2 restrictions back in late June ahead of Independence Day. Wasatch County restored those restrictions July 28th with high temperatures returning this weekend. Summit County's restrictions have remained in place. A violation of the restrictions can result in jail time and fines of up to $1,000. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City.